Welcome to yet another great, exciting, fantastic evening of Paranormal Talk Radio. As always, I have my co-host here with me, Mr. Tim Bickers. Tim, how you doing?
Very well, sir. Thank you.
All right, awesome. We're going to have our great friend and colleague and podcast counterpart. We have Kenny Biddle waiting to get on here as our special guest for tonight. We're kind of having our farewell episode because we're moving to a new network and we're going to make our big announcement where we're going to be moving to, and I'm sure we'll have some great topics to talk about for our last show here on Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to go ahead and get Kenny on and welcome him to the show. So get him on here on the list. Here we go. My list has grown since the very beginning.
That's good. That's a good sign.
Yeah. All right. So it says it's dialing. And hopefully everything will be connected appropriately. Kenny!
I do too.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Not much. I'm just glad we're all connected.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We are all connected. We are all stardust. Oh, boy. You are my brothers. My energy goes out into the cosmos.
This is cosmic wasteland.
What conversation did I walk into? An alcohol-fueled one.
Yeah. Oh,
sweet. There we go. I'm well prepared.
So, Kenny, welcome to the show. This is our farewell show to Blog Talk Radio, so to speak. So I'm glad you can be a part of our special episode. You've been on before. We've done our I Am Kenny Biddle segments, which was always a blast. You know, it's always educational. I hope everybody learned something from our listeners and hope we were able to give some knowledge and pass some good information on to our listeners and anyone else who is willing. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, buddy. Always fun to be back here. I love talking to you guys.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. You know, and good times and bad times.
It's always fun. I enjoy it. I always love the opportunity to learn something. And that's the greatest part about doing this show so far.
Right. I mean, we all get to learn something. I mean, we discuss things. I mean, we've gone through step by step on investigations and pseudo investigations and discussed what we hated, what we liked, what was wrong and why. And I think that's the most important thing. Like, we didn't actually just talk about what we hated. We said, this is what we think is wrong, and this is why. And we gave all the reasons we could think of why.
And the best thing of all that is that I didn't get any death threats while doing all that.
That's because they all come to me.
Well, the other good part about that is what I think is a great missing piece a lot of times, is that we say, if you think we get something wrong in our opinion, tell us. We're not going to open the show and call anybody out. It's important, you know. If you don't like what we say, or if you think we get something wrong, tell us. Because, quite frankly, I've been wrong more than a few times. It's happened.
I've been wrong, and I welcome new information. I welcome somebody that has the correct information.
Yes.
Coming on and telling me and saying, "Hey, look, you know, you said this, but it's wrong, and this is why." As long as you cite sources, as long as you have some kind of reference. You know, you can't just come on and say, you know, my brother's sister's cousin said that, you know, you were wrong because they saw a ghost. Yeah, that doesn't cut it. That doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
Give me good references. Give me good information and stuff that I can follow up on. And, hey, I freely admit when I'm wrong. And I've done it. I've done it publicly, you know, on my page, my blogs and stuff. When I have messed up, I have no shame. You should see me at parties. I have not seen at all.
Oh, there's no shame there at all.
Nope. Oh, boy.
So, well, what have been some of your favorite segments that we've hosted here with you on our show up to this date? Like, what have been some of your finest moments? What have been some of the most fun conversations you think we've had so far?
I think probably one of the most fun conversations was... I think it was, unfortunately, I don't think you were there, Matt. It was me and Tim.
Those are the best ones.
I think it was an impromptu thing. You were late for something. I think you had car trouble.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. Yeah, and you called and asked if I could fill in. I just went pretty much step by step through, okay, what's a ghost investigation? And we went through everything from getting the story and interviewing and setting. I don't think we actually went through everything. We didn't get through all the steps.
We didn't. But we didn't. Yeah, we had to stop after like 12.
It was fun, though. I mean, we really got into a lot of detail and back and forth, and I liked that kind of discussion. It was open. It was free. There was no bashing back and forth, which is nice. There wasn't like, you know, you suck because you think that way. and it was just fun. And I enjoyed that one probably because that just was pure discussion. That was pure science, talking about scientific process and methods and why other things that you see on TV are wrong. Bullshit. and what you could do to improve it. It wasn't just saying this is wrong. We offered why we thought it was wrong, and we also offered what we thought would be a better way to do it. You know, so you didn't just walk away thinking, well, I learned from TV, I'm doing it, it's all wrong, now what do I do? We gave you stuff to do. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a better way to do it. But, I mean, from there, I mean, I love all our shows. We have a good time. Yeah. I love coming on this show, and I love talking, even when we have specific topics or no topic at all. It's great. The other one was when we went through, like, photographs. Matt, I think you picked out a bunch of photographs that you saw online, like unexplained photographs, and we went through them. You know, we talked about them. We posted them on your Facebook page and in the chat room.
Yeah, that was fun.
Look at them. We discussed them, and that was good because it was really breaking down.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, the normal orbs and mist and breath and bugs and stuff like that.
But what was fun about it, Kenny, was what I enjoyed about most about that particular show is, like you said, we broke it down. We didn't just sit there and go, oh, this is not paranormal. This is, you know, we didn't bash the photograph. We didn't say, oh, this isn't this, this isn't that. We kind of, like, broke it down into certain elements of it, and you kind of talked about, like, what we were looking for. And we got into specifics because of the photography background that you have.
Yeah, and I mean, it really demonstrated what we talked about before, the burden of proof. Because when people make claims, and we've always talked about this too, when people make a claim, it is up to them to provide evidence and proof of that claim. So when you flip it around, and what we were doing, we were saying, no, this photograph is not paranormal. We were making a claim. So it was up to us to demonstrate why.
Right.
And that's what we did.
Yep.
It's
kind of like a role reversal kind of thing.
It is. I mean, it's the same. It is still the burden of proof. You know, it's still the direction it's supposed to go. But yes, it's reversed because usually we're the ones asking, okay, well, you have this picture, you have this video, you have this, you know, whatever you're presenting. You're saying it's paranormal or it's a ghost or whatever. Where's your proof? You have to provide proof. Extraordinary proof, too, because it is an extraordinary claim.
And yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
So the bigger your claim, the bigger the amount of evidence that you have to provide.
And I just want to make a note to our listeners, too, that if they're listening to this show. When I speak about evidence, I mean, you know, just because you have a clip of what you're claiming, that's not evidence. What we mean by evidence is you need to support that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you have – evidence is not – exactly what you said, because you have a clip, like a 10-second video clip, that you can't explain what that little white blob of light is. That's not evidence. That's still data.
Yeah.
That's, for you, it's data. And you have to present that for peer review. You have to analyze it yourself, figure out what you can, and then you need to go out and find professionals in the areas of study that relate to this. People that deal with video and editing and photography, and say, what do you guys think of this? You know, tell me, critique it and get that back. And then once it goes through a bunch of the channels and people get opinions, you get professional opinions, now you can say, well, this is evidence of something because no one could explain this. I don't know what it is. And basically when it comes down to that, it is evidence of something. It doesn't mean it's evidence of a ghost.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ghost is, what is a ghost? You know, that's the best, that's the big question. What is it? We don't know. There's so many different versions. You can't actually say this is proof of a ghost because we don't know what it is. But the burden of proof has always been on the person making the claim.
I was going to say, and the other thing that kind of bothers me about being a paranormal investigator and a researcher is, you know, when you submit something to the public, you know, again, a clip is not evidence, but what I really want to look for in a group or investigative group, you know, whatever your investigative style is, a lot of people submit, you know, data, but they have no, like, documentation to go along with that. They have no, like, paperwork. They have no data logging information. Right. It's just, like, pure video or audio, and, like, that's all they have. And I think it would just help, you know, the community a whole lot better if they can present that stuff. And I'm not asking for, like, their client's medical history or, you know, personal information that shouldn't be shared in the public. You know, there are things you can still share that I think would help that piece of evidence that you're trying to submit. And, like for example, Dave Schumacher of the Wisconsin Research Group, you know, they kind of get into technical data paperwork, and they went on their website and they showed this whole like spreadsheet of data like all over the place from an investigation they did in Gettysburg. And I thought it was wonderful that not only did they share and publicize what they were doing, but they backed it up with a whole bunch of documentation. And that's the one thing I think is the key missing element from all these groups that are going out there in public saying, you know, we have this, we have that, but then they have none of this stuff.
Right. Right. And even with the private homes, which I still, for a ghost hunting team, I'm against ghost hunting teams going into private homes. I really don't think it's good because you're dealing with a lot of psychological issues that I don't think most teams are capable of handling.
And a lawsuit waiting to happen.
So much wrong there.
Me and Tim are waiting for that day.
Yeah, it's coming. I love the attorney that we interviewed about stuff like this. I loved it. He said, you know, we kind of talked about some of the problems that could come from, you know, misdiagnosing, but not even seeing some simple signs and problems coming out. And he said something to effect, I'd have to listen to it again, but he worded it something like, I would love to take a case like that against a paranormal team. He said I would take that in a heartbeat.
He'd make a lot of money.
In lawyer speak, that means he would love to sue you.
That means you guys are screwed.
Screwed. You will settle quickly.
Yeah.
This is exactly.
It might not even make trial.
No.
I watch them and I feel that guilt trip because I used to do that. I started out doing that and I thought it was cool and okay and I thought I knew what I was doing. But then I didn't look up anything. I didn't research it. I was just taking people's word for it. And I think back of all the crap that I told people that lived in these houses, and I didn't think of the aftermath. I didn't think that, okay, I'm here for like 4 hours. You know, I want to see some cool stuff. I want to experience some cool stuff. I want to get crap scared out of me and this and that. And then I'm leaving. And I'm not looking back. I don't think about it after that. You know, I write up my little story about it, and I looked at my pictures, and I sent it in to my team leader, and that was it. You know, and I had no thoughts about the people that actually live there that are hearing the stories from the team I was in and the team that I ran for a while. You know that, yeah, we saw a shadow figure. We saw something floating around this. I felt this. I felt evil. I felt bad. I felt somebody push me down the stairs. All this stuff. I can't imagine the mind. Yeah, I don't want to say it. Frack. That I gave people. And I feel so guilty about it. I guess that's why I'm so passionate about now that I'm on the other side and I have support on this other side. I have support on my skeptical side about looking at these things and not going in that direction and saying there are logical explanations for this. There's natural explanations for this. And telling people that it's ghosts and demons and shit like that, you are screwing people over big time. And that's why I'm so against the private investigations.
I share a story on here. You know, one of the deciding turning points for me is about private investigations was when we got a call from a lady who's an extended family member, and one of her relatives had a team in West Virginia come and look at them. And, you know, in the middle of the night, and this is an elderly lady, she was alone in the home. Her husband had passed away. Her family was grown and moved away, but not far away, but out of the house. In the middle of the night, they came to her and said, "We have to leave. You have a demon." Packed up their stuff and left. So left her there.
I would have been pissed.
The further aftermath that happened was she had several adult children. Some of the adult children were like, these guys are kooks, you know? But some believed it, like they were into it. And they had children. So it was this woman's grandchildren. And she supplemented income of course, you know, when it's family helps family, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, instead of paying a babysitter, I would much rather have my kids go to grandma's where they're going to get, you know, pancakes and cookies and, you know, somebody will watch them with their life. And so they stopped sending their kids to the house. So she stopped seeing her grandkids, and she lost some of her income. And it was all over. And this was the evidence that they put forward. They wouldn't call her back. They wouldn't call family members back. It took 6 months. The evidence put forward for proof of a demon in her house was a blue dot orb in the basement, a black dot orb that they caught upstairs, and a really terrible sounding EVP recording that when they played for him, they said, "We don't understand anything that it's saying." So the person that played the EVP for them said, "Well, if you listen close enough, you can hear him say, 'I'm going to kill somebody.'" It was the name of one of her adult children. And so they listened to it again, and then guess what happened? They heard it.
Wow.
Wow. Yes. And it was it was terrible, and it you know, I felt terrible for this lady because she was a sweet, sweet old lady. She was great, and the extended family was great. They just really needed someone to come back in and look at it. And of course, you know, we were more than happy to oblige, and we had our professional photographer, not only could he explain it for her, but he recreated the shots just in one evening there.
Awesome.
Looking at the photos that they had, he got approximately in the same position, did exactly the shots that they took, and came back and said, "Well, you know, here's your shots. It's really nothing. You know, I took several, he took a lot of shots." He goes, "Apparently, you know, things pop up every now and then." He said, did they tell you how many pictures they took? And they said, "No." He said, "Well, they probably just kept shooting and shooting and shooting until they got something."
Shoot until we get some.
Yeah. Shoot until you get something. And he goes, "I took, I don't know, it was 70-some shots until he got something."
Wow.
But, I mean, it's a long story, and I apologize for that, but I get passionate like you because that was a critical moment for me because I went, "Oh, man, this really spread across many generations of a family."
Yeah, there are two things, Tim, that stand out for me the most. Well, two red flags, I should say, is number one, it took them 6 months to even call her back. That's, you know, number one red flag. And, you know, number two, that, you know, they number one, well, the EVP, they didn't even know what it was, yet they had an explanation for it. And that's the number two flag.
Don't know what it is, therefore it's a demon.
Right.
It's a demon.
It's got it.
It's amazing. Well, that was a major moment where I had to reconsider, you know, not only the way I was looking, not only the things I was doing, but what I was doing, and that was it.
Yeah. You got to do that. I mean, I have similar stories, similar cases where just teams have gone in and said things like that, and then just left, and you leave this family with nothing, and I come in later and, you know, like pretty much cleaning up their crap.
That's what we did.
And yeah, they show you the pictures, they show you the video, and I'll sit there like, well, all right, well, I can show you how to do this right now. I can show you exactly how they did it, you know. And like you said, your photographer took like 70 pictures, and he got, you know. And there's some teams that take 1,000 pictures,
mm-hmm.
and they get 2 or 3 pictures that come out with something weird, and mm-hmm. that's the 3 pictures they show the family. The other 997 pictures that showed absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's how that you do things in pseudoscience. You take the negatives and you trash them. You just throw them away.
Yeah.
And you take the so-called positive results and then you push those and say, look, this is what we got. You know,
and this is what it isn't.
Yeah. This is, and then you make up stories about it because, you know, there's little dots. Apparently, that's how demons and ghosts travel.
Even when I thought about it, I was like, I thought, isn't blue supposed to represent happy in those? Isn't it like
I think you're pulling.
Doesn't that mean it? I thought blue was like cool.
Let me look up my mood ring chart here.
I was like, they even got that wrong.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Last year, this weekend coming up, next weekend, I'm going to a conference, the Paranormal Journeys Expo, and I went last year, and one of the booths, one of the vendors had a poster board, and it was that color chart.
Oh, yeah.
All the moods of an orb in their colors and what they're supposed to mean, and it was a big, big poster board that they were presenting, and I'm looking at it like, oh, I walked up the table because I'm like, you know, that's, I'm gonna start shit.
Yeah.
This is where it pisses me off, because I'm like, you obviously took a mood ring chart and you changed it to orbs. All right, let's talk about it. But there was a nice old lady at the booth, and that was it. So,
yeah,
really old, and I really didn't feel like,
yeah,
I didn't want to pick on her. So,
I understand. Until we younger completely
come around. But you see that kind of stuff, and it's ridiculous. It goes back to the burden of proof. You know, we've said it 1,000 times. You need evidence to back up your claim. You know, you can't just say, oh, I got these orbs, and, you know, it means demon. Your house is infested. Like, all right, who verified this? How did you verify it? You, Tim, talked to a photographer. You have a photographer on your team that was able to explain it. And that's what you're supposed to do. But you have countless other teams that just say, oh, well, you know what? Our group of 5 or 6 people, if we can't figure it out what it is, then that equates to unexplainable.
Yep.
And that's as far as they go.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, another thing that Tim and I always bring up from time to time on our show is the belief factor also. How many times do you see or hear people, you know, they change or manipulate investigations or evidence or, you know, events, conferences, to things so that, you know, you fit in because it's something you so strongly believe that, you know, they just want to believe in it so badly. And then, you know, they're trying to, like, turn your thinking into their beliefs or, you know, with their charts and, you know, charts of orbs and whatever.
They try to manipulate the situation to conform to their belief.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not. You have, honestly, you need to take your beliefs, put them in a box, and leave them at home when you do this stuff. Because your beliefs are your personal beliefs. They're personal. That's it. That's for you. It's not you. It's not your place to push your beliefs onto events that are happening elsewhere, at somebody else's house, at somebody else's place of business.
Yes.
Okay? You need to put your beliefs aside and look at what's going on. look at the facts, look at the details, and try to figure out what's going on in a logical process. Not, oh, well, you saw a shadow go across a room. Well, my belief system dictates that's a shadow person, so therefore that's what I'm going to tell you, and that's how we're going to base the rest of this investigation. Because right there, as soon as you hear that, as soon as that team hears that, and it conforms with their beliefs, they are on that trail, that path,
mm-hmm.
that it's already believed that this place has a shadow of a person, and that's it. There's no maybe. There's no, well, it could possibly be something else. No, they're believing that this has a shadow person, and that's what they're going to go get. And every little sound now, every sound that gets recorded that's garbled and they can't figure out what it is, that's going to be attributed to that shadow person. Everything that kind of moves out of place, if they can't find their car keys later, if somebody moves a camera and forgets that they bumped into it, that's going to be that shadow person. Every picture that shows some blurry image because they didn't use the flash, because they turned it off for some reason. They saw it on a TV show, I don't know. But that's going to be their shadow person. And I guarantee, turn off the flash, you will get shadow people. I guarantee it. So everything conforms with that belief as soon as they walk in the door. That's why you have to get rid of them.
Yep.
And you have to start from scratch. I don't like listening to the stories. I mean, I do listen to the stories anyway. But I think my process of investigation has incorporated that problem. Of going in with a bias. I know the stories, okay. I know what people supposedly said happens there, but I'm going to ignore that and just see what actually happens.
You know, that brings me to a good point that I've heard you talk about many times. Matt and I have talked about this, is I love listening to, you know, if somebody posts a picture of an old abandoned hotel, or not hotel, but okay, hotel, why not? Or an insane asylum, or a crumbling prison, you know.
Right.
When they see it, you know, usually the caption or what they say is, oh, you know that place is haunted. Like, and so, oh, yeah. And I'm going to investigate that place, and I can't wait to see what I find. Well, I mean, if you just think about what you're saying just for a second, when you look at something because it looks haunted, I mean, you know, and I'm not going to say I'm not guilty of it. You know, if I see someplace and it looks creepy, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'd like to get in there and see what's in there. But I also know myself enough to be able to say that's going to be fun, but you got to put that aside and weigh whatever you get objectively.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I love hearing them going, 17,000 people died there. You know one of them's still there, you know? You're like, really? Are they?
I actually do not know that.
How do you, are you sure, like 17,000? Are you sure it wasn't like 1699, 1701?
Right. Oh, that's fun.
But that goes with the belief. You know, when they get... It's all that confirmation bias, you know, everything, you make everything fit into what you want to have happen. And I think when they see this place and they get an opportunity to go somewhere, even if it's a private residence and maybe not something so horrible or decrepit as the place I mentioned, but when you go into it thinking, man, this place is hot. This place is active. We're going to catch something tonight. We're going to have an experience. Well, you are, because you believe you are.
You're setting yourself up for it.
Right, and that fit exactly what Kenny said. If your camera doesn't flash or your batteries die, God forbid, you know, like batteries never die. You know, yeah. If something's moved, then it goes, wow, man, I've had an experience.
There's so many, like, Facebook statuses that I see nowadays, you know, from time to time that, you know, whatever connections I have on Facebook, I see a group go, oh, we're investigating, I can't wait, you know, their excitement to investigate, you know, this most haunted, whatever, and I'm sitting there, oh, I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah, I love when you see, like, oh, we're going to so-and-so place, I can't wait for all the evidence we're going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not biased. you're going to love yourself.
I love the phrase, most haunted.
Yeah.
I mean, what is... one, How can every place be most haunted? There can only be one.
Yeah.
Hence the name. And two, I mean, how do you, what is most haunted? Is a person most pregnant, or are they just
pregnant? Where's the scale? How do we
measure? Where's the scale? Yes. What is most haunted when you say that?
Last weekend I got my hair cut, and the girl that cuts my hair, she knows I do all this stuff. She loves it. And as soon as I walked in, she's like, oh, I got to tell you, there's this place we're going to, and it's like a ghost hunt and stuff, and it's supposed to be the most haunted place in Pennsylvania. And I was like, all right. She's like, what do you think about that? I said, you know what? Do me a favor. Take out your phone right now. Pull up Google and put most haunted. And then just that. Just do a search. And she's like, why? I'm like, just do a search on that. Mm-hmm. And you'll see how many thousands of hits you're going to get of places that claim to be most haunted.
Most haunted.
It's a marketing gimmick. That's it.
Mm-hmm. It is a marketing gimmick. Yes, I was going to circle right around. Because nobody wants to pay $75 to $250 a night to go to the 50th most haunted place.
This isn't the most. It's down there a little bit, but
yeah,
still on the list.
We're still on the list. This is the kinda haunted place.
Yeah. It'd be cool to actually see if is there an actual list.
I don't know. Now I'm curious.
Matt brought it. You really brought it.
Matt, bring it. Yeah, you go find out.
I'm sure it's on Wikipedia somewhere.
I know that was kind of totally stumped me. I'm like, what? No, is there? Holy crap! What else? There's when you have the stories that go along with these places too. It's funny when, and I think we've talked about it, I actually think we had a conversation, Tim, about this. When you start out with a story, somebody tells you a ghost story about a place that they experienced, and if you stop right there when they're done and walk away, it's a ghost story. But for someone like me, I'll start asking questions. Oh, well, you said you saw this. Was it this long? How long did you see it? Did you actually get a clear shot at it? Was there anybody in the way? And I'll start asking a lot of questions. And usually, and not all the time, but usually, the first story that I get completely changes. It's almost like a transformer. It completely changes into something else by the end of the questions, because you bring out details, and they realize that details they have filled in over the years are not actually true, and they don't remember it. Or they didn't have the view that they thought they did. They didn't have as much detail as they thought they did. And by the end of the conversation, it's almost a completely different story. Mm-hmm. And you find out a lot of the big details, the important ones that really make it a ghost story, have fallen short of being true. And they didn't actually happen. Yeah. So that's something I promote.
Yeah, or they just don't reconcile. And at some point you can see... You can see
the turmoil.
and we talked about this on your show. You know, this is like one of the things I do when I interview is details. And it's great. You know, I listen to the story, and it's exactly like you said. You go back and you kind of start asking, what do you remember seeing? What do you remember hearing? What do you remember smelling? And when the details, when they kind of start falling into place, and you can say, you know, well, I saw this person in the living room. I was sitting in the kitchen when it happened, and nobody else, you know, was in the house. And you say, well, what was in the kitchen? Well, the refrigerator. You know, what do you remember? Where do you remember sitting? What was in your living room? A couch? Could you, you know, can you remember seeing into the room? And they start remembering, well, the couch was there, or the television stand was here at the time. And you can start to see them piece together. Well, maybe I couldn't see as clear as I thought I could see into the room, and you can see the difficulty in reconciling the story to what they actually remember, and you right. begin to see it on their face, and which is a good moment. It's a good moment. I mean, it's true. It's not all the time, but right. in some cases it happens.
In some cases, yeah, it happens. And when you're nice about it, and you're yes. not just, you know, a douchebag, when uh-huh. you're nice about it, it's cool, because they get to see, they start to realize for themselves that, all right, maybe I'm not remembering this right. Maybe I did fill in some of the blanks. Maybe, you know, things didn't happen the way I remember them now. And they start really think about it and second guessing themselves. And it's better that way instead of like me as an outsider going, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You're wrong. That detail's wrong. That doesn't make sense. You're wrong. Because that's just going to, instead of getting them to think about it more critically, they're going to get angry and combative towards me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to work. And it's interesting. You said that, you know, like you mentioned that they might say, well, I don't remember it as accurately as I think I do. And I come across that a lot where you start questioning somebody and they're like, I know what I saw. I remember it. I know I saw it. I remember it. I'm not stupid. This and that. And I always bring up the penny example. It's like, all right, you remember every detail. Yes. You remember it exactly. Yes. Okay. What's on the front of a U.S. penny? And usually I get Lincoln.
Uh-huh. I'm looking at my desk for a penny.
I'm like, I knew you were going to do that.
I've got a quarter, but...
What else is on the penny? And they look at you with a blank stare. Well, what's that have to do with it? Like, pretty much everybody in the United States usually touches a penny every day.
Yeah.
At least once a day. You probably have some in your pocket or on your desk or in the box chain. You get pennies back when you pay for something. We see it almost every day, and yet the details on the front of it and even on the back are, they escape us. You know, so thinking about that, how accurate are your memories of a paranormal event that you weren't ready for? Because it usually, I don't know any event that people are actually waiting and ready for. You know, it usually happens like all of a sudden, boom, something happens. So do you really think that your memory of that event that happened, and we can add in variables like late at night, you haven't slept, you know, you're up all day, and this event happened maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. You're obviously tired. What effects, you know, are you stressed out? All these other variables we can put in there if we want to. But this event happened. It happened quickly. And you got all excited. You're with your team. Everybody's asking questions and jumping around and making assumptions. So how accurate do you think the details of that event are from your point of view? They're not always that accurate. And in most cases, they're way off. So we have to go to video. We have to go to pictures and look at that and get better details. And the video might show things that happened that person that experienced it doesn't remember. And we have to compare it. And unfortunately, it's one of my policies, during the process of when I'm like reviewing photos or video, if the video information is conflicting with what the eyewitness is telling me, I 99 times out of 100, I go with the video or picture. Because that's not lying to me. The details in that, details that I see, that's not lying to me. And I'm not saying the person is lying. They are misremembering. Or they were mistaken. Or they didn't get details.
Yeah, they're not going to be accurate.
Yeah. So that's a big thing you have to watch out for, because the stories are going to change, and especially when we throw in the beliefs that we talked about earlier. Once you throw in the beliefs, people start playing that association game. You know, well, this happened, so that must be a demon. You know, I can't figure out the sound on the recorder, so it must be a demon because that's the way they talk. The shadow that we saw must be a ghost because there's no other explanation that I can think of.
There's no other explanation.
There's no. How many times have you heard that? You know, there's no. It can't be anything else. It's impossible. I was watching a video. Somebody sent me a video the other day, and this guy's watching dust particles in this house on their investigation. And one shoots across the screen, and he's going, well, no, that can't be dust. It's impossible. Because dust doesn't move like this and this and that. I'm like, it's freaking dust. How can you not? Oh, I had to stop watching because the guy was just, he was one of the experts.
And how do you know how dust moves? Like, right? Yeah. What's the research on that? Like, where has there been?
Is he an expert on airflow?
Yes. I mean, I can almost say I've wasted, like, hours, not all together, but separated, sitting in a chair because the sunbeam, it was a bright sunny day and the sunbeam was just cutting through, through a window, through the living room. And I just sat there, I just sat down because I'm like, wow, look at all the freaking dust that's flying around.
That dude needs to clean his house.
Shut up, man. But yeah, you see it, and it's like you close the blinds or they pull the shade down, and it's gone. You don't see it at all.
I remember doing that as a kid when the light would come through the curtains, and there was that one little thin strip, and you could see the break between the light beam coming in and, of course, the rest of the room. And you could see the dust particles in the light beam. And then you would look up, and there's nothing. You look back down, there's all these things. You look up, there's nothing. I remember as a kid going, what magic is this? What is this?
Magic,
I love that.
Magic dust.
You look at it, and if you sit there for a couple minutes, it's just amazing to see the flight patterns. You know, dust particles back and forth. Some spin around. They change direction constantly. They flow around. It's just like when you see underwater footage, and you get all the particles in the water that are just floating around and going pretty much anywhere they please. There are no rules. The air currents that they float on, we can't feel.
I like that. There's no rules to dust.
There's no rules. They float around, and they will change direction. I mean, if you go to a movie theater, that's one of the best places to do it. Go to a movie theater and sit up by the projector and then look up.
Yeah.
You have a dark theater and that bright light coming out, which acts just like the flash on your camera, that bright light coming out from the projector onto the screen, look into that beam, and you're going to be amazed at everything you see. I posted a video up on my Kenny Biddle blog.
For that.
And it was just that. I was at an autism convention, and I was actually working as the photographer for the event. And they were doing a presentation in this huge auditorium, and they had the projector going for the slideshow. And I looked up at it, and I was like, holy crap. There are like hundreds of thousands of dust particles. This is beautiful. And I started taking pictures, and I took video, and it was just a beautiful example to show, like, you don't realize how much dust is in the air. You really don't until you get a bright light like that.
You know, I would put forward a hypothesis.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Here we go.
For people that say
science. Stop your science crap, Harry.
Here we go. Especially for people that say there is no airflow in a room, I would venture to believe that what they say is they feel no airflow.
Right.
If you would go into a relatively cool to cold room, I don't know enough to say what temperature it should be, but I would say you're in an abandoned hospital, whatever. There's no heat in the building. It's old. It's November, October. It's pretty chilly. You're in a room. You're down in the basement. No windows. And you just know that there's no airflow. I would venture that your body heat, or the, depending on how many people you have in the room with you and the size of the room, your body heat could begin an airflow upwards because of the heat would begin to move upwards and take particles of dust with it. And then you would hear someone say, well, look, this piece of dust is moving up and there's no air. Do you think that would be possible?
Of course. I would think
your body heat would rise.
I mean,
and our, particles along with it.
Our bodies adjust the temperature all the time, I would imagine.
We put out a constant temperature. I mean, that's why we can take our temperature. That's why we know when we're sick, we can figure out a fever, okay? Because our temperature goes up. Our body's trying to compensate and heal itself and fight the virus. So, yeah, we are putting off heat. You can see it, you can see it like just the body, but like streets. When the streets get hot and you're looking and you get that mirage that happens, you can see the heat coming off. It still happens with us, but you just don't see it as much. But you also have to remember that air is something. It's not just there's nothing here. Like I'm in my office and I have all this air in the middle, but it's not an empty office. Yeah. Every time I move, I'm displacing air.
Ah, that's great too. That's a great point.
There you go.
Boom.
You are right.
Think about it when you go into a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. Swimming pool has a certain level of water in it. Okay, and when you jump in there, you're displacing water. And you can see if you mark the level of water in a pool with no one in it, and then you get your whole family in it, you'll see that the water level rises because everybody displaces it. Same thing with a room with air. When you come into a room, you are displacing air. Mm-hmm. As you move, you are creating air currents. Boom. You're moving the dust particles around. It happens. You have drafts.
Yeah. You create a high pressure of compressed air in front of you, but you also create a vacuum behind you.
Yes. And the air will rush in to fill that void.
Brilliant. The three of us. Let's just open a lab.
We should do a show. We should.
And here's another thing. Here's another thing I was thinking of while we were talking about that. Now, a static electricity is another thing that's used, you know, during investigations. They have all these little gadgets that light up that supposedly detect, you know, anomalous static electricity. And, when you create friction and you're walking or whatever you're touching, you're creating friction all the time. So, of course, all these little gadgets that are made to detect static electricity, that's another thing, you know?
Yep. Yeah, what do you wear? You wear nice woolen coats in the wintertime.
Yep.
And people are walking around, and no one's, even when you're sitting, it doesn't matter. You turn your head, you create an air current. It's just, that's what's happening. And I think, well, from what I've observed, the majority of your ghost hunting teams aren't thinking this deeply. You know, they're taking it at face value. They're just saying, there's no air currents. They can't feel anything, therefore, there are no air currents.
Yeah.
Yes, there are. That's where I think why people say that. There was no air flowing.
Right. And they don't think, again, it's just, that's just us. That's our bodies creating it. You're not taking into consideration drafts, windows. You go, all these old places that you go to, that ghost hunting teams go to, even if they're historical places, they usually have to preserve these historically accurately.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way to say it? Historically
I think accurate. So.
I think I've had a lot of drink.
Accurately historical.
Well, they have to be original.
So you're talking about window frames that probably do not seal correctly. In my experience, most of the places that I've been, historic buildings, they have gaps, big gaps between the windows. Some of them have been like a quarter inch. Some of them have been more than like over a 3/4 inch wide, which is huge. You're getting a lot of air coming in, and now you deal with interior, exterior air pressures, and you're going to get the magic door closing things upstairs, like bedroom doors and bathroom doors. They're going to, you know, close on their own because of the air pressure difference, and that's something I've come across a few times.
I looked at some, I can't say architect. No, I can't speak. I didn't look at the plans for historical building architecture. I didn't see the plans, but I've had a similar conversation like this before, and it made me think about, you know, people who built buildings before there was heating and air conditioning were really smart about what they did to the building to create the best that they could. I mean, these weren't, you know, people were intelligent about what they did back then. and they had to be creative because they didn't have forced air, you know, air conditioning. They didn't have forced air heating, so they had to design what they had the best to move the heat and the cool air the best they had. And one of the coolest things I read was about moving air in dance halls when they would have large dances in large houses. And so the coolest things, you know, especially in the fall and the winter, they couldn't leave the doors open. And so the heat would just be stagnant on the dance floor and around. So what they did was when they'd build high ceilings in these type of facilities for entertainment, and they would have vents up top that would go to the outside that would bring cool in up high, not cool in low, but it brought cool air in up high so that it would displace, speaking of displacement, as it fell, it would displace the hot air up quicker, and that would create a vacuum bullet at the bottom and bring in cooler air. So it would help circulate the awful smelly, you know, dance smell, because it would be hot. Yeah, but it would bring it up, and they would have vents in several places, hopefully, that would work outside and bring cool air in. But when I saw that, I was like, that was kind of genius, and it kind of took me into another realm of just interesting things about architecture, which I love. But, you know, old houses, when you see old houses built on stone, they're lifted off the ground. Some of those stone were just, they were removable in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And that was to create a breeze underneath the house to keep the bottom cool.
Right.
And I wonder when people say there's no air current in this place, there's no way. Yeah, I wonder, you know, just from the little bit I read, you know, quite frankly, there probably is. You'd be surprised to find out how they did it.
Yeah. And there's all smart. You really have to look through the entire location and document everything. The one big case I did was a place called Selma Mansion, and it's in Norristown, Pennsylvania. And a group had gone in there and actually filmed a TV show. And during their overnight investigation or weekend investigation, one of their static cameras picked up a door closing by itself. On the second floor, and I looked at it, and it was a typical closing. It kind of closed a little bit, then a little bit more, and then when it got real close, it slammed. Mm-hmm. But then it opened again, and I'm looking at this going, all right, well, I've seen this dozens of times. This happens in my house, you know, when I have the front door open, a bedroom door, if it's closed or open just enough, it'll go back and forth. It'll bang. It'll open. It'll bang again. And I approached the group. I said, you know, this is probably what it is. And the person I was in contact with totally, you know, put me off. He didn't care. He didn't think it was right. He thought I was totally crazy. So, and the biggest reason was that he said the entire place was sealed up. They just got new windows in this place. Everything was sealed up. There was no way air could get in. And I said, all right, you know what? I don't believe you. I don't mean to be mean, but I don't. I'm going to see for myself. So I made arrangements to actually go out there, and I had the day to myself. I had the place to myself for an entire day and was able to go through. And within 10 minutes, I went up on the third floor, and there was a complete window. And this is an old windows where I could actually stand on the windowsill, and I had to put my arm up and reach the top of the window. So, huge window.
Awesome.
Okay. I walk into this room, and it's nothing but a big tarp over top of it.
Uh-huh.
That's billowing back and forth. I'm like, oh, that's a bad sign. Let me take a look. And I moved it aside. It wasn't even sealed, but moved the tarp aside, and the entire window is gone. There's nothing there. There were shutters that were closed on it, but it was open to the elements. And I'm like, all right, well, this is one big window that obviously wasn't replaced.
It wasn't sealed.
It wasn't sealed.
And you go, well, it had a tarp.
They had a tarp, yeah. That fixes everything.
Yeah.
But
And then I went through and just found gaps and open windows. And, I mean, the attic was, it had like a, it's supposed to have two windows on either side that were probably, like, they were circular windows, probably about 3 to 4 feet in diameter. And one was completely gone. There was like a wire mesh in front of it, but it was open. And there was holes in the attic floor going down to the third floor. So I'm like, whoa. All right. Guys, what about this? You know, and that started another argument.
Oh, boy.
So, because they, you know.
I can imagine how it ended.
Well, I mean, it ended, eventually it ended good, because the guy that was actually in charge of that team called me, and it was great. He was like, you did a great job, thank you. The other guy is no longer with us. So, okay.
Don't quit his day job.
Well, you know, and I would hope that a facility or a building isn't completely sealed 100%, because you know what that would mean at some point.
We would die.
You would die if it had no air that could possibly get back in to replace what you use up.
Yes. Yeah. It would run into that problem we saw in that movie Apollo 13, you know, where they had to get the carbon monoxide scrubbers, carbon dioxide scrubbers, to scrub it out and replace the oxygen, because you would run out of oxygen. So yeah, no building is completely sealed.
Yeah,
that would be bad.
Well, that would be really bad. You might save a lot in the winter, yeah. But not
and that's another thing I want to bring up, though, is a lot of teams, they go into these places, and not every location is going to be a complete controlled environment. You're not going to have, you know, every controlled, you know, thing in your control. Places aren't going to shut down their power completely to you. You're not going to have the entire place to yourself or by yourselves, not all the time. You know, they're not going to just hand over the keys and say, here you go, you know. You know, so they don't take into account all these, you know, little things that we're talking about. You know, these teams just, like, kind of, like you say, they take things for a lot of times at face value.
Right. And I think a big step would be if they realized that. Because just like you said, you mentioned controlled environment. And that's one of the biggest things in science. When you do any kind of experiment, you need to have control of the environment. And I don't know of any ghost hunting team that has done their investigation or hunt or whatever that has had a controlled environment. You need to control every single variable. Let me rephrase that. You need to control every single known variable. And then when you're doing your experiment, you can change one at a time to see if there is a difference with your results. But when they're doing their EVP sessions, when they're taking video, when they're taking pictures and walking through with their EMF meters or whatever other meters that blink and make annoying noises, there are no controlled environments. There are so many things that could be making the meters go off, that could be causing anomalies in the photographs and videos, but they don't account for any of these variables. So therefore, the whole scientific process that they claim to use is complete bullshit. They're not. And I'm not trying to be mean. It's just, that's the honest truth.
It's fact.
You know? And they need to realize it. They need to stop saying, we're using the scientific method, we're using the scientific process. You're not. Not at all.
That's the thing, too, is like terminology is a big misinterpretation or misleading the public,
yes,
you know, intentionally, to make themselves, you know, sound better or look better. And I don't know, I think teams need to be careful with, you know, what terminology they're using.
I think some of them use it deliberately. I do see that, especially when you call them out on it and they start backtracking. They know they screwed up. But I think there's a large majority that use terminology incorrectly because that's what they've been exposed to. They watch these damn TV shows. And they follow other websites. They follow these para-celebrities that, for the most part, are actors and actresses. And, I don't know, is there a difference anymore? Are they all actors?
I would think so.
Anyway.
Well, they're acting at something.
There you go. Actors. they're all actors. They're not scientists. They don't consult scientists. They pretty much make up their own definitions as they go along, and or they hear something that sounds good. They take a scientific term like theory, and it sounds good. It goes with science. Hypothesis is not something they hear every day. So therefore, you know what? We're going to go with theory. And they start using it. It becomes a buzzword. And now it doesn't mean crap in the paranormal community, because everything's a theory. You know what? There's gravity is a theory, but it's a scientific theory.
I like the word idea. I think idea is a better word.
It's an idea, but there are established definitions for all this, the terminology they use. There are. They have to look in that. I know this is getting showing my age, but you have to look in this book called A Dictionary. And
Webster.
I know. What is that? I've heard.
And not Wikipedia, damn it.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can easily go into Google and type define and then whatever word you want. And it will give you Oxford Dictionary, the American Dictionary, Webster's, Meridian Dictionary. It will come up and give you full definitions and examples of uses, so you can figure out what's going on. And that would be a good start, you know, instead of using all this terminology that they don't understand.
Well, I remember a very popular ghost hunting show. It was one of the very first ones. And the cameos, it would be out on the ghost hunt. Then every now and then, right before or right after something strange happens, they would break to a cameo of them sitting in a seat with a black, background backdrop. And they would say, the theory is, ghosts use energy from the battery to drain. It was always that. The theory is. And it just, right, like you said, I think people hear that and they parrot it. They hear it and they speak it and they don't understand it. And it becomes part of the culture to say the theory is, and that sounds better. It has a nice ring to it. It sounds, it's sciencey, as our friend says. Which I love that word now. It's very sciencey sounding.
Well, it's like what Kenny said. It's just something, unfortunately, that they've always been exposed to, so they don't know any other way but those ways.
Right.
And like you mentioned, energy. That kills me, dude.
I remember your little article about the energy stuff.
Energy is defined as the ability. Actually, it's the capacity to do work. So it's the ability to do work. When I eat food, it gives me energy to move around, to lift things, to think, to do all this stuff. Okay. It does not mean there's some mystical force out there that is feeding ghosts. It doesn't mean that. So when you hear stuff like positive and negative energy in a room, that makes absolutely no freaking sense.
Yeah.
it doesn't. When you hear, I feel an energy force that bumped into me, or I can read the ghost's energy. No, you cannot.
Well,
it doesn't make sense.
Allegedly, ghosts work. I mean, they open and close doors by themselves. And
then we have to discover what they're using to power their ethereal bodies or whatever. But saying that you felt their energy bump into you, no. You are totally misusing that term. When you say positive energy or negative energy, you sound like an idiot. From a scientific perspective, because there is no positive and negative energy. It's not good and bad. It's energy. It's not like I eat, a steak and I get good energy, and I eat tacos and I get bad energy. It doesn't work that way.
Energy is a pet peeve of mine. It's been a pet peeve of mine for a while. I get, I do the internal eye roll when I hear, the energy of the place was
ominous and very spooky. I mean, it's great for a story. Like, don't get me wrong. I don't mean it like that. I love reading, you know, Stephen King and the energy and you know, right. The place, you know, the energy of the room was murderous amongst itself. You know, that's cool to read. But if I hear someone say, you know, in a ghost investigation, say the energy of the room was almost demonic, whatever. Like, so you're interpreting your fear that you feel when you go into the room as a demonic energy, which you're just interpreting your senses, putting your body on alert is what you're doing.
Right.
Fight or freeze.
Right.
You know, the energy in the room is just the ambient temperature, basically, and that's pretty much it.
That's it. I mean, we can measure electrical energy, yeah. Thermal, mechanical energy. We can measure that and predict outputs and stuff like that. We can do that. That's through science. But, yeah, ghost energy? No. And, mm-hmm. And you know what? One of the podcasts that I listen to, Skeptoid, a science writer, Brian Dunning, put it perfectly. He said the next time that, you know, somebody uses energy in that sense, stop them and say, you know what? Replace the word energy with the phrase measurable work capacity or capability. Mm-hmm. Either measurable work capability. And then see if it makes sense. Because if it sounds stupid when you do that, that means your use of the word energy is wrong. That's basically what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah, that kills me. When people start saying energy this and energy that and life energy and, you know, fairy energy mixing with my negative energy in my wand and all that, yo, it drives me crazy. I have to walk away. Because, yeah, that's when you pick your battles. And usually that battle is not worth it because it's just it's going to be a lot of wasted time. It's like when you get sucked into Facebook all day.
It's like kind of beating a dead horse.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, energy kind of – I think energy is one of the ones that really run amok in the field or the community. And I also think it's something that, unbeknownst by many, take the community away from where I think a lot of people want it to go. And, you know, I hear a lot the common – you know, I hear this chant, for lack of a better word, that nobody takes the field seriously. Well, stop saying energy.
Yeah.
Stop that. Don't say you put out your energy into the universe and you got this message back. Stop it.
What they need to do is stop treating it as a separate entity. You know, if you want to be taken seriously and you want to be treated in the, I guess, genre of science, if you want to be taken seriously by science, then you have to start doing science.
Yeah,
everything that I see being done in the paranormal field, now across ghost hunting and Bigfoot, cryptozoology, and UFOs, everything that I see is not science. It's pseudoscience. So if you want to be taken seriously, stop doing what you're doing. Stop following TV shows, you know, like Not Finding Bigfoot and stuff like that, and start looking at what scientists are doing. How they work. Talk to them. You can go on to forums and web pages and university sites and see what kind of work they're doing. Start reading scientific journals to see how much detail. Hell, read one paper from a scientific journal. And you will be amazed. You will blow your mind with how much detail is put into those things.
A lot of work.
I know. It takes me a while to read some of them. Because... like, I got to look up some of the words.
I've read some, and I have to read them, like, a couple times before I get the gist. And then, like, I have my, you know, if I have them on my computer, I can just mark them and highlight different phrases and words or highlight it and do Google search for this word.
Yes.
You know, because, I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I mean, I don't understand everything in those things. So if I want to learn, I gotta look, you know.
Right. You know what's really funny is when I look on the back of ingredients of like food or medications, and you read half of the words, like it makes me think, like, where the hell do they come up with the words for this crap?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, have you ever read the ingredients of a banana?
No.
It's amazing. It's amazing when you actually break down a banana, which is a natural food source. It's grown, and it's just, that's it, a plain banana, nothing added. And you break it down into all its chemical components. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I can't pronounce most of the words that are on
that's
that
what
list.
I mean.
But that's it. I mean, you have to do the hard work. When you compare a paper that's in a legitimate scientific journal, to the work that you see the majority of ghost hunters do, it's a joke. There's no question why science will not take ghost hunting seriously. It's painfully obvious why they wouldn't, because there's no work being done. There's no real work. There's no honest research. No, I mean, when your basic idea of a ghost hunter, and I'm probably going to piss off a lot of people, but when the basic idea is that, all right, I'm going to take a bunch of equipment that I don't know how to use correctly, that I don't know how to correctly interpret the results of the data, and I'm going to take it to a place that I already believe is haunted by ghosts, because I believe ghosts exist.
Yeah.
And any time that goes off, or beeps, or blinks, or whatever, that's going to be my evidence that ghosts exist, despite having no control over the environment. And anything could make this go off, because I don't know how this actually works. So I don't know what else could make this work besides what I already believe will make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take all those results and take it back, and instead of having professionals review it, I'm going to have my friends on my team look at it that have as much clue how it works and what it does as I do. And if they can't figure it out, well then, there you go. We are going to present that as proof positive that ghosts exist and this place was haunted, and we're going to declare this place is haunted, and we're going to come back again and again because it's haunted, and we're going to show pictures of orbs and shit like that.
It's most haunted.
It's most haunted. It's the most haunted place we've ever been to.
Oh, yeah.
Pictures and noises that we can't understand. It says something. We have no idea what, but we're going to wait until somebody figures it out. Then we're going to put text on the bottom of the video where we play this, and now you're going to hear what we hear because we're going to prime you. And we have no idea about any of the psychological effects that we're incorporating here. And that's it. That's your work. That's ghost hunting in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
You're going to compare that to a scientific journal and all the work that they put in, the months and years of research that they put into it, and the supporting data that they do, the references that they cite, all the equipment that they do know how to use, and probably built themselves, so they have an intimate understanding of how it works and the results that it gets. And they also self-correct. So they get other people that are in their field to look at their stuff and say, here, tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are wrong, they say, damn. Okay. We'll go back and start again.
Yep.
And that's how science works. You don't take those two camps and expect me to treat each one equally.
No.
Because it's not.
It is. And I'll add that the equipment that they use is measuring what the equipment was built to measure.
Yeah.
It's calibrated to measure what it's built to measure.
Wait, what's that word, calibrated?
What is that?
But you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's not a piece, like, if they're doing research on, you know, electricity, you know, they don't go out and buy a piece of equipment that measures
the pH
water depth. Well, you know, I'm working with electricity, but I've got this depth finder because theory is electricity bounces back and forth through depth. I don't know. But, you know, they'll go out and get a piece of equipment that measures electricity, current, something.
I mean, if you put on a couple LEDs and a buzzer, you're good. You can actually add $50, $60 onto the price tag.
Yeah.
Just for that. And you're good to go. Basic understanding of the equipment that you're using is a necessity. So you're right. If people, everybody uses EMF meters. Okay. The majority of the ones that they're using are for household use. So
or entertainment purposes only.
Yeah. they are only measuring a scale that covers the frequencies within a household. You know, so your power lines, your equipment, your computers, your TVs, your radios, all that stuff that's inside a house. That's what it's made for. There is a certain range. So you need to understand that. And when it goes off, it's reading in that range. Okay? That's all it does. There's no other meaning to it. So it doesn't mean there's a ghost or demon or alien or Bigfoot. Because now they're using them for Bigfoot adventures. I don't know why.
I know.
EMFs?
Yeah.
Yes. They're taking them into the woods with them. And saying that Bigfoot somehow affects the EMF.
I have not heard of that.
EM field. Oh, it's ridiculous. I'm planning on going on a Bigfoot hunt in May.
You know, quite frankly, a thermal imager might be actually applicable to a Bigfoot hunt.
A Bigfoot hunt, yeah.
Yeah, an EMF?
No, not at all. But that's it. I mean, they're using it for a purpose that's not designed for. You know, it's not going to give you this magical reading that you're talking to a ghost or you picked up a ghost. I don't know where that idea came from. I do search for that. I try to find out.
Who is the original to come up with that? Yeah.
I have no idea. But I don't know. My guess is that they're using it because somebody did and it blinks.
You know? Somebody did and got high ratings.
Yeah. They got something. You know what? It was probably somebody that was using it, and they were talking, and their buddy had a two-way radio and was screwing with them. You know? And it just grew from there. It was like, oh, I can talk to ghosts with an EMF meter because it goes off. I answer your question, and boom. And, you know, his buddy Bob is behind him in the next room with a two-way going, click, 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 click.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Be sure you film his face.
It worked. I really think people should understand, like, learn about the equipment before you use it. You know, is there a reason why you really need this? What does this do? What affects it? What else can affect it? You know, is it worth the money that you're putting out? That's a big thing.
That's what slaves me is, like, a lot of this equipment is so freaking expensive. It's like the price of like a mortgage or a car payment. And yet on the back of it says, you know, made for entertainment purposes only. So you're going to take all this money that you could be putting towards a mortgage payment or your car payment, and you're putting it into something that doesn't guarantee you nothing.
That you don't know what it does. The last conference I went to, I walk around. I have a habit of, even if I set up a table that has all science stuff, so you know I don't get much traffic, I walk around. I make it a habit of walking around and talking to every vendor. And I talked to one, and they were using a phone app from
tough guy.
And I asked him a bunch of questions about it. He couldn't answer me at all. Ask him how it works. How do you know the results are valid? What controls were in place? You know, typical questions. And it was nice. It was a friendly conversation. And he was really, you could see that he started thinking about it. Like, this was a bad idea. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have bought this thing. And I don't know why I'm using it. Mm-hmm. And another, I guess his team leader came over. And we're talking. And I asked him the same questions. And you could see the light bulb come on over his head. Like, holy crap. I never thought of this shit. And then I came back like an hour later and I'm talking to him and he had a bag. I said, what'd you get? And he's like, oh, well, I got this so-and-so piece of equipment. And I was like, all right, what's it do? Well, it you know, when a entity comes near it, it goes off. Okay. Oh, how? What's it do? Well, I'm not really sure. And how much did you spend on this? $80? And you don't know how it works.
Now we know why he didn't get to work that day, because he spent $80 instead of putting in his gas tank.
$80 on a device. I mean, I do yard sales and flea markets every weekend. Okay, and I will be hard pressed to let go of $5 on an antique that I know is worth a lot of money. I want to know everything about it first. You know, you need to really, before you spend $80, $50 even, you know, that's a lot of money. Yeah, today. And ghost hunters, from my experience, they're not rich. You know, they work every day like us. Yeah. You know, they work hard for their money. They don't make a lot of it. And this is their hobby. So if you're going to drop that kind of cash on something, you really should know how it works before you buy it. You know, that's what I would think. What do you think?
I agree. Well,
but the theory is,
yeah,
it's the most haunted gadget ever.
In the history of haunted gadgets that have ever been haunted, this is the most haunted.
This is the most sensitive.
On the top 100 most haunted places list. So, guys, we got about 5 minutes left here. I know we have a time frame here, so.
Oh, I had a great story I had it pulled up on, and it'll be way too long, so I'll post it on one of the Facebooks. I can't think of the Facebook page now. Great. Don't kill me.
Yours or mine?
I might post it on yours. We like looking for news stories. And the most haunted thing, why I brought that up, is because the title of this says, "World's Most Haunted Doll Vanishes After Coming to Life."
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
It's got the whole story of, how this must be valid because, you know, it's in a museum and the museum has this high-tech anti-theft, security system, and it never went off, and they came to the museum one day and the doll was gone. So the only explanation that could possibly be is it came to life and walked away.
It must be. That must be. I'm sure the cameras were operational. You know, what's funny about that is that most of your paranormal enthusiasts will take that exactly the way you told it. Like, the doll got up and walked away. Holy crap.
Holy crap. And you're that means... It. In the community, there is a killer demon doll
on the loose. On the loose. We don't know where it is.
Get your EMF meters.
You better the whole time we're telling this story, the only thing I'm thinking is, well, it's an inside job.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody that worked in the security department wanted this doll. And that's it. They turned everything off for like 2 minutes, took the doll, turned everything back on.
Yep.
Okay. So there you go. That's where I would start looking.
As a matter of fact,
in one of the comments, one of the more reasonable people put, "You should start the investigation by looking on eBay." And I was like, "There is a thinker."
I know who did it. It was Zach Bagans.
Damn it.
This is supposed to be some well-known, it's well-known doll that, you know, and even says, after an elaborate security system was installed, I'm reading it now, the museum manager was constantly being called back to investigate alarms tripped by movement in the house. Okay.
Well, there's your clue.
But the morning that they came in and arrived, the doll was gone. No alarms had been tripped. Nobody had been in the house. The doll mysteriously escaped and has never been seen since.
So this elaborate security system did not include video surveillance.
Oh, exactly my first thought.
Okay. That was my first thought, and I'm like, okay, I want to see the video.
Oh, you're not saying anything about video, so...
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Great. So, sorry, I know I'm going to make awesome. Matt go over, but I just... When Kenny was coming on, I thought, oh, I saw this. This is going to be...
Now I got to look up that story.
No, that was a great story. It was funny.
Post that link on my site so I can read it. Okay, hold on.
Okay. good times. Always good times with Kenny Biddle on our show.
Sweet.
But
it is, isn't it?
Yeah. We got to say farewell to Blog Talk Radio because this is our last episode on Blog Talk Radio. It's been a blast, and as always, it's been a blast with you, Kenny.
Thank you.
And
enjoy it.
Yeah, hopefully we won't get some death threats. But if I do, I'll send them your way.
Yeah, thanks.
But
what's your name?
Yeah.
My name's Kenny Biddle.
No, I hope everybody, you know, can learn from, you know, what we're saying here on the show. I mean, you know, I don't want people to take what we say like the wrong way. We want the community to do better things and you know, kind of practice proper method and proper terminology and, you know, stop taking things at face value and just research and most of all, like what we always say, Ken, is learn.
Yeah, learn every day. Never stop learning, and that's the most important thing. Don't stop learning and take it seriously. If you want someone like me, and again, I'm nobody. I'm just a guy that writes and promotes.
Did I lose everybody?
Oh, okay. We're back.
We're back.
I can edit that out.
It happened right after I posted that link.
Wait, don't forget to look in the back seat of your car if you go anywhere tonight, because it might be in the back seat looking at you in the rearview mirror.
Now I'm scared.
Oh,
I'm gonna unlink it.
Don't give in to the dark side.
I had to say that.
Yeah, the dark side has cookies.
So. All
right. So. I guess I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It kind of died down there. I'm like, all right, there's my cue. I'm out.
No, it was great having you, Ken. And
thanks, guys.
Thanks for
always fun to have you, Ken.
Yeah. Thanks for being part of our last episode here on Blog Talk, and hopefully we'll have you know, good times in the future on our new network. We'll always invite you, and you're always welcome on our show all the time. You know that.
Good.
All right.
All right. You guys be good, have fun, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye. All right, so that was Kenny Biddle. We hope everybody enjoyed him as our guest tonight. I know me and Tim always have fun, always great discussions with him. He's always open-minded about, you know, learning and sharing his knowledge as well, and hopefully, you know, our listeners can learn a lot from him and you know, our discussions and... hope we're not too harsh or scare people away.
That's true. I mean, I'm not even mad. I mean, we have fun with it. And I, you know, both of us, we've always said, you know, we don't want to belittle anybody's beliefs. I just think, you know, if we can just get someone thinking about stuff, if you just think about, you know, open the door a little bit to allow maybe a couple of new ideas to come in, just to kick them around. You know, I think once that starts, it's a enjoyable feeling, at least for me, to think about something that I believe is true, and then test it against other beliefs and see if it still holds up. And it's kind of fun. It's a lot of fun thought experiments involved in it. And sometimes it turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, we're not always right. And like we always say, as part of our introduction to our show, we're not experts in any way. And we're learning as much as you are learning, because I like to think of the community as that way. I believe it's all a learning experience for everybody, whether you're a beginner or not. You know, whether we are more experienced than you, or or vice versa. You could be more experienced than us, and you could teach us something. We're not against that whatsoever. And, you know, like I said, I just don't want people to take our opinions, you know, the wrong way. We're trying to treat it with a better light, and we just want better things, because we do want to take it seriously, and we want people to learn more, and the more that we learn, the more I think we'll get our answers.
That's right.
You know?
The more we challenge each other, too.
Yeah. So, but I do want to make a couple announcements since we are at the end of our show here. You know, we are going to be moving to a new network. I do want to say that. It's going to be called Spreaker, Spreaker.com, and we'll provide the information on our Facebook page once we gather that information and we get everything going. We're moving to that network. We feel it's going to be better for our listeners and for ourselves as radio hosts. I think we're going to get you know, better options and much more better things out of Spreaker.com. And you know, we had a blast here at Blog Talk, but you know, just things didn't work out the way we'd like, and you know, I don't know, I just think it's time to move on to better things. And we're going to start our new network on October 2nd. That's a couple weeks away.
And give us time to work out any kinks.
yeah, it's going to give us time to work out stuff to get our new network going. Actually, October 2nd, we're going to have a returning guest. His name is Christopher DeCesare. And he wrote the book Surviving Evidence as we promote the continuing series of the C2D1 30th Anniversary Paranormal Symposium event that I'm lecturing at SUNY Geneseo, New York. And I'm thankful to be selected as a lecturer for that event. And I'm going to be investigating with a bunch of top people in the community, such as John Tobin, Chip Reichenfall, a bunch of other great people are going to be there. And you know, I want you guys to check it out. There is a website, c2d1haunting.com, for more info about the event. It's free, and you guys know me. If it's free, it's for me. So
we can afford free.
Yeah, free is the best. So, I know. So, farewell to Blah Talk. And I know, it's been a hell of a ride, Tim.
Yes, sir.
We wish everybody a great weekend, even though we're doing this on a Sunday, so, but you guys will hear this show on Friday, and we want to wish everybody, you know, good times, and bless everyone, and I don't know, it's been a blast, and we'll see you on the new network.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to say good night, everybody.